Welcome to the Aha Moment with
Erin Backus
and Irene Barber, where we talk to professionals in horticultural therapy and related fields, sharing their journeys of discovering the powerful benefits of working with plants. Sit back and enjoy some inspirational stories accompanied with laughter and refreshments.
Welcome, welcome. It is the Aha Moment, and this is Erin Backus. I have my co-host with me tonight.
Hello, hello. It's Irene Barber.
And our guest tonight is Marcus Willimon.
Yeah, hi, everybody. I'm Marcus Willimon. I'm in West North Carolina. I work for Cooper Reese, healing farm, residential setting for the mentally ill. And I'm practicing HT there on a daily basis.
That's so great. And just to give our listeners a little bit of background about Marcus, he grew up in Switzerland. He got his horticultural degree from Zurich University in 1979. And the summer of 1994, he moved to Georgia and worked there for a little bit. And I'll let Marcus tell more about that later. But then also, he's been at Cooper Reese since 2003. Mm-hmm. And then you did your HT courses at HTI, correct?
That's correct, yes.
You were there 2007. You weren't that too far behind me, right?
Something like that, 2006, 2007.
Yep, cool. And we're very happy to have Marcus here this evening. So Irene, take it away. It's your spot now.
Thank you. Well, it's a privilege to have you in this conversation, Marcus. So I first met you at a conference where it was at Asheville's conference, and I met you at Cooper Reese and was just enamored by the setting that you work in and what you were in charge of. And so I was thinking about, who could we have to talk to us about their journey of coming to horticultural therapy? And I just really thought, Marcus would probably have a very colorful story on coming into horticultural therapy. So
here, if you could that? Just,
that was in, what was that, 2010?
Something like that.
Yeah. If you could just tell us a little bit about, I wouldn't say we normally start with, where you are now, but I think your journey is so exceptional. If you could just give us a little bit of a prelude to where you are now, how did you come to this point of, oh my gosh, horticultural therapy, but maybe a little backstory as to even how you got into horticulture for the most part.
Well, I got into horticulture. I'm fourth generation horticulturist. It's my great-grandfather who started the horticulture business back in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a family of six. My mother was a florist. I have two brothers and three sisters. And out of those, my two brothers went also in horticulture, and one of my sisters became a florist. Mm-hmm. And I have a sister-in-law who's a florist, so it's all in the family.
I would say so.
The horticulture part.
I have to say, if anyone has been to Switzerland, I've had the fortune to go, they are the capital of flower boxes, of, the railing boxes just dripping right. And drooling with amazing geraniums and ivies and every kind of plant you can imagine in a window box. Oh my God. It's the best greeting you can ask for coming into a country like that. It was beautiful.
So, and we produced mostly geraniums. We were a licensed producer for Ogilvy Limited, a breeding company out of the United States at that time. And they offered me a job, here in the United States for their Georgia division.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
They also asked me to support them in for their production sites throughout Europe because I'm multilingual. And as you know, even up in management here in America, they're not very good at foreign languages. So when we went to Holland, when we went to Germany, when we went to France, they needed somebody who could speak those languages. And so I did that at the same time.
So you were a grower and spokesperson.
Well, I did a lot of education, taught people how to produce Ogilvy products. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. So you did a lot of the training on the international basis.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
I also also worked in Kenya. I worked in Tunisia. I worked in Mexico.
Wow.
All doing the same thing, you know, teach people how to grow geraniums, mother plants, because we were a breeding company and a young plant company. Ogilvy doesn't exist anymore.
I was just going to say, I don't think it's not around anymore. I was curious because I remember.
It was bought up by Eki Poinsettias.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know, you know, what happened after that because I left them in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's where it becomes interesting, talking about my story.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was in charge, I was general manager of their Georgia division, plus all their overseas production sites.
Mm-hmm.
That was out of Atlanta. Their production site in Georgia was just south of the airport in Atlanta, mm-hmm. which was also a good thing for me because I had so much international travel to do. So it was nice to be right beside the big airport. But at the same time, in Georgia, I met what we call my spiritual teacher. So I started to really dive into spirituality and what I want to do, purpose of my life, and why I'm here on this earth at this time. And that spiritual teacher, her name is Jackie Woods, moved up here to West North Carolina, 3.5 miles from Cooper Reese. So, and she started, but back in Atlanta, she just gave classes and sessions and that kind of stuff. So we had workshops and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But then she started an intentional community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my wife and I live now. Just as I said, 3.5 miles from Cooper Reese. So that's why I quit Ogilvy in the year 2000 to move to Western North Carolina to be part of that community. And then I was looking around. I was still looking around for jobs in the horticulture field. But at the same time, I thought, because of what I learned in our intentional community, I was looking for something more purposeful.
Right, more fulfilling. Yeah.
More fulfilling.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to heal. This community here is here to heal, to help heal the planet. Mm-hmm. Well, I was looking for something healing. And then...
Mm-hmm.
One day I drove by a big construction site, which said Cooper Reese was a big phone number on it. So I called that phone number and Lisbeth Reese Cooper answered the phone. And I said, what are you guys doing there? What do you mean this is a healing farm? Mm. What do you mean by that? And she said, well, come on over and I give you a tour. So she gave me a tour. That was in November of 2002.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you were there from the beginning.
Yes.
Wow.
And after she gave me the tour, I said, I told her, I'm not leaving that property till you give me a job. This is what I want to do.
Do it. Oh, I love it.
So she said, I can't do that. My husband and I, we are the board, but right. We are in the process of hiring a CEO.
Right.
And then a month later, I got a phone call from a guy named Virgil Stocker, who got hired as the first CEO of Cooper Reese. And he interviewed me. And so that's how I got to Cooper Reese. And I started, together with Virgil Stocker, we started on April 1st, 2003. And we opened for residents June 1st, 2003.
Huh.
So I was there when my job at that time was just to put the greenhouses together, put the garden together, you know, all those spring work you need to do. Mm-hmm. So we were prepared when the first residents came in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I started.
Mm-hmm. And I have to ask, so you're a horticulturist coming into Cooper Reese and you're saying to them, I want to work here. And what capacity did you find yourself, you know, a value, an asset to them? I mean, were they doing it based off, did they say, oh, you know, plants, we need to grow lots of vegetables. I mean, what was your role in the very beginning?
No, when I had that tour with Lisbeth, she told me that really they want to, create a working farm for the mentally ill. So that was mm-hmm. very clear. And I mm-hmm. and the garden was already there. The two greenhouses were already built.
Mm-hmm.
But everything was overgrown because nobody. And I said, who is taking care of the farm? Who is taking care of the garden?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to do this? And she said, I have no idea. She is an interior. Lisbeth is an interior designer, and her husband, Don, he came from the insurance industry.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no clue. Mm-hmm. So when I interviewed with Virgil, he had no clue either. He had no background, not in agriculture or in... He had an MBA in non-profit organizations.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So yeah. He ran nonprofit organizations. That right. was his background.
Right.
So he said, I need professional people. So he hired a PhD psychologist.
Right.
And he hired me for the work program, what we mm-hmm. call the work program.
But it was the work program just, was about farming.
Yes.
Yeah.
So... You know, if I look what we have today in the work program, there is the greenhouse is one program, the garden is one program, the animal care is one, you know, what we call a crew, a work crew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The wood shop is one and the art barn is one. So we have mm-hmm. five.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Five work crews. And it was my job to put all this together and... was mostly the garden and the greenhouses.
And so along the way, you're getting these connections, these relationships with the residents of the center. And what are you feeling along the way? I mean, in the concept of how you then arrived to the opportunity of practicing horticultural therapy. What brought you to that?
When I started in 2003, I didn't know horticulture therapy existed.
Right.
But then a couple years later, the AHDA conference was in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And Virgil Stocker saw that and sent me there.
Mm-hmm.
And said, go and check that out. That might be interesting for us. That might be something we should do here
mm-hmm.
To have that extra education, mm-hmm. how we can use all your horticulture background in our setting.
Right.
And as you know, I don't remember the name. We had AHJ had an office in Denver at that time.
Oh, wow. Yep.
There wasn't a company who, association company who run.
Right.
We had our own office. And
right.
The director of that office called me the following year and talked me into joining the board
mm-hmm.
of AHJ. And I stayed there till after the our conference in Asheville.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's how.
And your educational, so at that time, what were the criteria for you to become a practicing horticultural therapist? You know, so you had all your horticulture, obviously. So what were
that
some
was
of the other
all
things?
That was all good. And at that time, you know, we HDR was given out on a point system
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
at that time. So I did all the courses with HDI.
Mm-hmm.
out of Denver, and I went to all the conferences till I had my points.
Mm-hmm.
And once I had my points, I became an HDR.
Okay. And as a professional, do you find that you work with psychiatrists, but do you actually end up collaborating with them and wanting to learn a little bit more about the psychological approaches to horticultural therapy a little bit more in depth?
Well, absolutely, because all of our crew leaders are part of a treatment team. Mm-hmm. I take up to 4 people in the greenhouse working with mm-hmm. me at any given time. But those 4 people, I'm part of their treatment team. Mm-hmm. And we have a ton of internal trainings.
Mm-hmm.
Every Wednesday afternoon is training day at Cooper mm-hmm. Reese.
Okay.
So that's how we get all the training. We have a psychiatrist on staff. We have all, mm-hmm. we have 5 therapists on staff. We have 5 social workers on staff.
Mm-hmm.
So we integrate all those different things.
Mm-hmm.
So we are all on the same page, and that's right. where we get our education from.
Right, right. You're basically as a team teaching each other.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah. That is fantastic. Oh my goodness. And can you give our listeners a little bit of a background as to the population? So the detail about mental health, et cetera, and does that, I think it's just a very fascinating center. And so I just was wondering about the population that you've worked with and whom do you feel an affinity or do you have any kind of perspective as a practitioner in horticultural therapy of the people who you engage with, are there some who seem to gravitate more to the plants than others, I guess?
Well, if you look at the diagnosis, there is no difference. Mm-hmm. It's always personal. If we take any diagnosis, it doesn't matter what they're. Most of our people come from a hospital. They're released from a psychiatric hospital, but they're not well enough to go back into their families, or most of our people had multiple hospitalization before they come to us.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper Reese is not cheap.
Yeah.
So people that come to us, they're really at the end of their, they don't know what else to do.
And insurance does not facilitate it, correct? Doesn't support it.
It's difficult. It's getting better.
Uh-huh.
But we have very few who are really supported by. I mean, uh-huh. we can probably, for most of people, we can charge their sessions with the therapist, the sessions with the psychiatrists, but we can't charge to the all the rest, you know, the living expenses and the horticulture therapy or the equine therapy or the art therapy or any of that is covered by few insurance. Yeah. But the diagnosis, you know, is we have a lot of bipolar, we have a lot of depression, we have a lot of schizophrenia, psychosis. I mean, you name it. With people on the spectrum, we got everything. The one in Texas. What's the name again? The big hospital in Houston.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And, you know, some people, they come because of the animals, some people's. And we have made two groups in horticulture therapy. The one we call the garden, that's for the people. I may have to go back a little bit and talk about our population a little bit. Our population is about 60% male, 40% female in the residence. It's about 70% are in their 20s, and about 20% are in their 30s, till about mid-40s, and very few are over 45 or in their 50s. We don't have a limit other than they have to be 18 or older.
Right.
But there is no limit how old they can be.
And they have to be willing to come on their own, right? Voluntarily?
Yes, kind of.
All right.
And that's one of the struggles we have because a lot of people that come to us are... quite a few have had their run-ins with the legal system. So they have the choice between going to a residential setting or going to jail. I don't call that voluntary.
No. It's an ultimatum kind of thing.
And then a good part, the parents just say, look, either you go or we take the support away. Same thing. So we have a lot of those young males. And the young males, that's why we divided the greenhouse work where we do the transplanting, the seeding, the plant care, and where everything is on tables and benches. And we have sitting areas where they can work and sit. And then we have the garden for those young males who need more physical activity. So
more intensive work to...
More intense so they can choose. They can still work with plants. You know, we will... Right now, our greenhouse is full of little seedlings to go out in the garden. But the people who work with me in the greenhouse are not inclined to go out and bend over and work in the ground and plant all those plants.
I see.
That's why we separated those. So they have a choice.
Well, it's an interesting phenomenon too, because to be honest, when I work with, I'm a landscape designer and landscaper. And when I work with, you know, males and females, the females are much more interested in the creative and more finer detail sort of things. And the males are like, where are the boulders? Give me the hearts, you know, like they're much more into the big hefty items and, you know, they don't want. So it, I think it, it applies in almost any setting. So.
Yeah. And some of our people with psychosis and schizophrenia, they just need hard work to, to get out of their head.
Right. That's a good point.
That's a very true statement, Marcus. The when I remember it, individuals at Silver Hill with that diagnosis, they do the best when they're working with rakes or like digging a hole to plant, things like that, like and to keep them busy so they're
so more physically engaged.
Right.
So they're not listening to the voices in their head. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really all fascinating. And I think it's a wonderful center. And I think of people who, I mean, actually one thing I have to say is the fact that you're from Switzerland, and if anyone isn't familiar with the landscape around Asheville, it's very hilly, you know, it's in the, by the Appalachians, and it's, or amongst them. And it has a feeling of that verdant greenery in the valleys of Switzerland. So do you feel a little bit like a home away from home when you're there?
Not quite. I would have to go to Colorado for that.
Talking about North Carolina feels like that. Sorry, I'm going to disagree with
those, you know, those are not mountains here. Those are hills.
Oh, that's okay. Fine. But I'm just saying the greenery, though, like, never mind. I don't want to get fixated on this. But
well, the greenery is fine. And I mean, it's, they're both beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's not the same.
No, I mean, I know. Yeah.
The Alps are much more rugged than.
Yeah.
They look like. They really look like the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah. Right. Or the Grand Tetons, like tons of the Grand Tetons.
Well, that's part of the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah. So was there anything aside from meeting your spiritual leader, and then, which is a very big deal, I understand. And then she saying, you know, Marcus, I'm starting this wonderful community in Western North Carolina. You go there. But was there something that also said the aha to you? I mean, was it when you walked through the doors of the new building of Cooper Reese, or was there something before that that you felt like horticultural therapy or something based off of that was relevant for you?
Well, the aha for me was when I saw that you can in the physical, you can combine psychology and psychiatry with gardening. You know, the people, our residents, they do a lot more gardening than they do sessions or group sessions. Or, I mean, out of the week, they're every morning, they're with me from 9 till 12, from 1 till 3, other than on Wednesday afternoon. Wednesday afternoon is different. As I said, we have a community meeting, and then they have a room cleaning and that kind of stuff while we are in training. So, but, you know, that's 5 hours a day. 4 days a week plus, well, that's 23 hours a day, a week, where they, and then they have, beside that, they have, each day they have a group, a 1 hour group, and twice a week they have a therapy session, and then they have other sessions with our, that are in between, because we also have a wellness professional for physical wellness and nutritional wellness and all that. So they have those in between.
And so feeling like they have purpose and that they can have, they have that capability, has more of an intentional platform to the therapy. Is that what I understand? It's so the therapy is there when you make this time for it, but it's not the focus of it. It's really doing something that's bigger focus, than just the individual.
We call it a healing community for a reason.
Right.
Because the community aspect is the biggest. And that's what we get out. You know, we do an intake interview with each resident, and when they leave, they got an interview again, and from those answers, what we get is the community part is probably the biggest part for them. Is that's right. where they get the most out of it.
Exactly. Right. Right. Something bigger than the ethos.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, they're part of a group, they're part of a, they don't have to do it all by themselves, because
right.
when they're together with the therapist, it's a one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we work with them, as I said, we are normally four people plus me, and a lot of time I have quite a few interns. A lot of time I have an intern with me.
Right. So, speaking of interns, so horticultural therapy intern site, is that what I understand then?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
I have one starting in May again.
Nice, nice. Yeah. If I hadn't been living in Maine and established, I would probably go there for my internship for sure. So we need to kind of close up here, but we have a question, being the fact that you grow in the greenhouse predominant or a lot, I should say. This question pertains to you very relevantly. So I hope that Aaron is ready and set to ask this question. She laughs.
So embarrassed when you announce it. Like my only part, Marcus, is my only part. You know, of course, it's great. Both myself and you and Irene, we both have like horticulture backgrounds going into this field. So what is your like go-to plant that you mainly use with patients in your groups? Or I know it might be hard for us horticulturists to kind of
narrow it down,
but like, do you have a general plant or
I have a botanical garden in the greenhouse, but I always reserve about a third of the greenhouse to seasonal crops, and those are mostly very ornamentals. Right now I have 300 Primula obconica flowering.
Ooh, wow. Ooh, beautiful.
We produce about 250 mums in the summer, during the summer months.
Do you guys use those for the farm or do you sell them?
We don't sell anything.
No. Okay.
We give it away. A good part goes to our outreach ministry. And you wouldn't believe how well that goes with our residents when they can go and give something they have grown to somebody who can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
They really light up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's also, they also see that there is other people with different challenges. And now they have made something, they have helped grow something to help those people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then for Christmas we do our 300 poinsettias. So throughout the year I always have some. Right now this week we're going to transplant the annuals, vinca, begonia semperflorens, that kind of stuff, and that is going to be planted around the main house, around the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be planted. We've transplant those. They have been seeded 3-4 weeks ago. They go in 6-packs now, so we can plant them early May. Because right now our pansies are in full bloom.
Mm-hmm.
So the pansies, that's another one of those we do. Then I have a section with just succulents, because you can do such great arrangements with succulents.
Mm-hmm.
You have so much possibilities with them. Mm-hmm. We have a section with ferns. I like the ferns because that they're completely different as a plant. There are different propagation methods.
Yep.
Then I have a pretty small section, but we have about 30 orchids. So we...
Oh, cool.
Because that's all... And then I have some exotic plants, always some exotic plants. Mm-hmm. So they see something they have never seen before.
Yep.
Plus, then I have a whole section where we do all the seedlings for the garden.
Do now any of the residents?
I have 2,500 square feet to work with.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Do any of the residents, when they leave Cooper Reese, do you find that the skills that they build, while it's a therapeutic opportunity, it's a skill building opportunity, do you find that any of them look for working in greenhouses or do gardening in some capacity?
I had one last fall who works in a greenhouse now.
Yep.
And I had one this spring who discharged back home and said he's going to look to grow in it. He had never been in a greenhouse before. And he said he wants to work in a greenhouse now.
Love it.
And he was with us about 3.5 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Started in.
Well, and that's a really good point, is the time that somebody commits or has a relationship to the plants and their development kind of brings this whole other opportunity of realizing, you know, they are serving a purpose of growing, nurturing something for, you know, not just like a window plant, a house plant for indoors for, you know, a week or so.
No, we have, as I said, we do everything.
Moved
all you know, throughout the winter, we have the whole section where we with fresh herbs also.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
For our kitchen. And we, every week, we do about 4 or 5 flats of microgreens for our kitchen.
That's cool.
That's really cool because mm-hmm. that's so fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Such a fast turnover.
Uh-huh. Right.
So, you know, succulents are very slow. Ferns are very slow.
Yeah,
so you have to show them there is everything. With plants, you have everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
have so
yeah.
many possibilities.
Right, right. And to show the variety is good.
And show the varieties. And then you have like the mums and the poinsettias who need about a half a year, you know, from start to finish. You got everything. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just, yeah.
Thank you so much, Marcus. You're really... I could listen to you. Aaron and I are so fortunate to have guests who you guys provide so much, you know, just inspirational stories, and they're not just stories, they're real life. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes. Thank you very much for coming on tonight, Marcus. All right, everyone. Thank you. And we will see you next time on the Aha Moment. Have a good night.